Happy week 18, NFL fans. It is another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm Joe Bergeron-Manish, finally back. I was in a walker all week. I was in traction on Monday and Tuesday after recording. I just got out of bed. I've been so tired, bedridden from carrying the team on Sunday, but I'm so glad to have you guys back. How's your week starting? How you boys doing?
Week's a lot better now. The week's a lot better now because I'm sitting here talking to you. Listen, you couldn't get out of bed, man. They would have had me 6 feet under if I had to do that. Nobody wants to listen to me talk for 30 minutes straight. Let's be honest.
I got to be honest with you. I think one episode of the Joe Show is probably all we need during the season.
About 30 minutes too much of Joe is what we got on Monday, or what we released on Monday. But like, let's jump into it here. We released an awesome interview yesterday. Go check it out. We had Aditi Kinkabwala on. She's a sideline reporter for CBS, multi-talented. Manish and her go into all of their friggin' inside, for lack of a better term, inside football, inside baseball, inside women's college basketball. We get into everything on that interview, so check out yesterday's release. But let's get into the meat and potatoes of the episode. Let's put a steak, let's put a little Delmonico on there with a little mash, little drizzle on the top of the butter. Manish, who do we got at number 5 on our power rankings this week?
Yeah, we got a team that is dangerous because of one side of the ball, their defense, and that's the Houston Texans. 8-game winning streak, just beat the Chargers this past week. I still have significant concerns about C.J. Stroud. He started off this game against the Chargers with 2 deep bombs. You thought he was on his way to an all-world performance, and then he kind of disappeared for the remaining 3 quarters, and I think that's the biggest bugaboo for this team because we know that they can shut down elite quarterbacks. They did it with Justin Herbert this past week. A few weeks back, they did it to Josh Allen. They have not lost since November 2nd, so it's been 2 months. They are on a heater with a Super Bowl caliber defense. My concern with them, as I've said in the past, is the quarterback. Is he good enough to win 3 games to get to the Super Bowl? Or should I say, is the defense good enough to mask C.J. Stroud's deficiencies to get to the Super Bowl? I'm not sold on them, but clearly, you know, winning for the last 2 consecutive months and beating another playoff team in Los Angeles this past week to get them to 11-5 puts them in a well-deserved spot in the top 5.
I just feel that the Texans are an augmented version of a team that we're going to have in the honorable mention this week, the Broncos. It's just like that defense is legitimately scary. They can get home with 4. They can drop 7 into coverage and still get pressure on the quarterback. I think, and if you're playing in the AFC and you guys have guys like Drake May, Josh Allen, potentially Lamar Jackson, potentially Aaron Rodgers, you have top 5, top 10 caliber quarterbacks that you need to get after. And you've seen in this day and age with the mobile quarterbacks who have cannons, like the model quarterback like Josh Allen, you really need to have athletic, smart pass rushers, keep him in the pocket, kind of close it in instead of like having get it upfield. We can get it to Minutia and all that stuff. But like I said, they're like an augmented version of the Broncos. I feel like the Broncos defense is a little bit more porous. I feel like this Texans defense is really, really clamping down. I don't think their offense is as high profile. I don't think their passing game can get to the heights that the Broncos can. So I just see them as like an augmented version. They have this unbelievable world-beating defense that they've kind of hid behind and that's carried them through these last 2 months in their winning streak. And they have an even more Jekyll and Hyde version of their offense, because it's like C.J. Stroud starts these games great, and then that the 2 interceptions he threw were horrible. I watched this whole game, and that first interception, even though it was tipped, he was throwing it right to Derwin James anyway. So the Texans are going to be fun to watch because I think they could beat anybody with that defense. But man, it really seems like if you put friggin' 14 points on the board, you're going to have a really good chance of beating that team.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about them for quite a bit. They're riding that long win streak. For all intents and purposes, they're going to be a wild card team. I don't believe the Jaguars are going to lose their matchup to the Titans. We'll talk about the Jaguars in a minute here. But we've been talking about this defense. That defense has a chance to be a game changer in the playoffs. We all know that in the playoffs, these games tighten up, right? The games, it's not as much of a shootout, as you will, in the playoffs. It always seems that the game slows down and it tightens up. And that seems to fit what the Texans are looking to do. That said, you kind of hit the nail on the head with their offense, what version of their offense is going to show up. And I'll tell you what, as a fan of a team that is going to be playing on wild card weekend, they're the one team I don't want to see. I don't think anybody wants to see this team strictly because of the defense. And we'll just roll it right into number four here. And it's the number four team on our power rankings. If you ask me, they should be higher. I keep getting shot down. The arguments in the group chat have been contentious.
We did a good job.
Well, sorry. a certain team who was in our rankings as of yesterday morning decided to throw us a bone and made this a little bit easier than it needed to be. But it's the New England Patriots, tied for the best record in the NFL. Say what you want about their schedule. Say what you want. But Drake May, against the worst team in the league, had a historic performance. Historic numbers, 90% completion percentage, 5 touchdowns. Guy played 2 quarters and 1 series in this game. Game was over at halftime, which I don't think anybody was surprised at. I know Manish wasn't. He was there. Was it his lock of the week last week, picking the Patriots minus all those points? But look, this team is continuing to beat up on everybody that they're playing. And granted, their competition, their schedule has been the easiest in NFL history. I note that. But what can you do with the opponents you're playing? Obviously, we're going to see come playoff time when they actually have to play like these tested opponents, you know, with the with an actual playoff team. We'll find out some more. And, you know, maybe they're not higher because of the news that came out today about Stephon Diggs getting arrested. And what's that going to mean for
he didn't get arrested.
Whatever. He was going to be arraigned, whatever.
Whatever.
He's in trouble with the law, right? And it's some pretty serious allegations that have been levied towards him. Is he going to be there in the playoffs? Is he going to get put on the exempt list? That's a big kind of, black cloud hanging over this team right now, a distraction for a team that's really getting ready to go. They clinched the AFC East by virtue of the Bills losing to the Philadelphia Eagles, which was a fun one to watch for the noted Bills hater on the pod. But they're going to be getting healthier. Milton Williams is going to be coming back. Will Campbell's going to be coming back. Hopefully, guys like Kayshawn Booty, Jared Wilson, these guys are all getting better. Robert Spillane, Harold Landry, you know, laundry list of injuries for this team. So I think how far they go in the playoffs is going to be really dependent on them not having to test their depth. And we've seen that had to happen. We've seen some cracks in what it was earlier in the season. Hopefully those guys can get healthy and they can get make a deep run in the playoffs.
Well, I feel like the thing with the Pats is I think they've earned a top 5 power ranking this year, regular season wise. But I do think that a lot of what Manish brings up when we do these power rankings and a lot of the narrative about the Patriots is I don't want to say true, but it's at least valid. Like they do need to win a playoff game to validate this season and what they've done versus all of these crap teams. But what I will say, the positive things to kind of combat that is you go down 11 points to the Ravens, even though they're complicit in their own demise, you get punched in the face in that game and you come back. You have the giant blown lead to the Bills. I think even though in the time it was a huge negative, you could have clinched the division there. You could have really made a statement versus the Bills. But I think having that big blow up and that big pants crapping, for lack of a better term, a couple weeks before the playoffs might have been a good thing. So I think a lot of the concerns about the Patriots and their level of play are valid. I think their lack of playoff experience going up against some of the teams that you could see, even Houston has more playoff experience. Even a team like the Broncos has more playoff experience than the Patriots do right now. So a lot of concerns around that team. Don't want to seem too much like homers here. But I do think they've earned a top 5 regular season spot, but I do think that there's really a lot of validation for this team that needs to go on in the playoffs.
Yeah. And look, they technically can still get the 1 seed. I don't think it's going to happen because the Chargers aren't going to play anybody against the Broncos. Stranger things have happened, but let's just say they don't get the number 1 seed. The question that I have, and I've said this on the podcast, I've said it, offline as well, is that when you have a team that has only beaten one team this season with a winning record, how realistic is it that they can win 3 games against 3 teams who've had winning records this season? I'm not saying it's impossible, because clearly it's not impossible, but it's just something that you haven't seen yet. And that's where my concern is. And, I'm not a born and raised New Englander. I'm not a Patriots fan, but I can tell you how impressed I've been with Drake May and Mike Vrabel. I think that, if we can just kind of pause the power rankings for a minute, I think this is a good opportunity to discuss whether Drake May will win the NFL MVP, because I have been a staunch supporter of Matthew Stafford. And then a few weeks ago, I thought Josh Allen entered the equation after the comeback win in Foxborough. But clearly Allen, after missing a layup on a two-point conversion against the Eagles, is out of the conversation. So it's really a two-horse race between Stafford and May. May put up the monster numbers in 2.5 quarters against the Jets. Stafford, overall, still has ridiculous numbers, season-long numbers, 42 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. However, 6 of those 8 interceptions, this is remarkable, 6 of the 8 interceptions he has on the season have come in the last 5 games. He's had 2 multi-interception games, including what everyone remembers most recently, the 3 interception flop on Monday night against a Falcons team that had nothing to play for. And I know that Sean McVay says that the Rams starters are going to play in week 18. Seeing is believing. I certainly don't believe Stafford's going to play the entire game. So the question really becomes, do you think in all likelihood, the second-seeded Patriots quarterback, who's had an unbelievable second season in Drake May, is more worthy than Matthew Stafford, who in the middle portion of the season, I think it was the better part of 2 months, maybe even more than 2 months, he didn't even throw a pick. It was something like, 20 touchdowns, no interceptions.
So record.
Faltering, right. Like the Rams now, there's a reason why they're out of the top 5. They've lost their last 2 games. You can make a case that 2 weeks ago, when Matthew Stafford throws for over 450 yards and 3 touchdowns, it's not his fault, and that's a valid case. But the bottom line is that they did lose those 2 games, and they're probably staring at a 6 seed. I think, much like the last couple years, a valid case can be made for the top 2 guys. It was Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen the last 2 years. This year, it's Drake May, Matthew Stafford. I'm genuinely fascinated to see who the voters side with, because there's 50 voters, and it's not going to be a runaway. I think it's going to be pretty close to a 50-50 split. So I'm actually very fascinated to see which direction this goes in. But Matthew Stafford laying an egg on Monday night against a terrible Falcons team has seriously opened the door for Drake May to take this.
Well, and I feel like these awards, and this isn't even like a football point. This is like an NBA point. And even to get shout out to your boy Embiid, Manish, I think this is becoming way more of a narrative-based award and who has the narrative going into voting more than it does the actual merits of their season. You know what I mean? Dude, if we're being totally honest, if you just went by stats and who's playing the position the best, Matthew Stafford has been far and away the MVP, if that's your definition. But if you take Drake May off the Patriots and put an average quarterback in there, and you take Matt Stafford off of the Rams and put an average quarterback in there, I think the value to the Patriots that Drake May brings is higher than the value that Stafford brings. The Rams have a loaded roster. He's playing point guard on a loaded 98 Bulls team. Like obviously you're going to have the numbers. He's obviously executing and doing great things, and they have a great team, and he's playing unbelievable. But I think my point to start off what I'm saying here, the narrative base, I think him playing the way he did down the stretch, even though he might have a better numbers and a better overall season than Drake May, he just shoots himself in the foot by playing the way he did against 2 teams that the Patriots beat, one of them pretty handily, in a Drake May coming out party. So I think the juxtaposition and the fact that you can directly compare those things, I know there's not a direct comparison and a correlation in the NFL. You can't say they're better than this team because they beat them and they lost to them. I know you can't do that. But I think with these awards, the only way you can directly compare them sometimes is going by those common opponents, and Drake May is running away with that one right now.
And it's interesting too. What's going to fascinate me as well is like, if you view it as a virtual tie, like when you think like you could pick either one of these guys, like you said, Manish, there's valid arguments everywhere for both of these 2 players. Do they lean towards the elder statesman? Right? Do they lead?
Who has not won an MVP in his career, by the way.
Correct.
That should not matter, but I guarantee it will matter.
Yeah, you think about having that mentality when it goes into voting. Oh, well, Drake May's only in his second year. He's got plenty of time to win another award. Matthew Stafford's in his late 30s, in the arguably the twilight of his career, and who knows how many more years he's going to play. Do you quote unquote throw him a bone because this is a virtual tie, and that being the tiebreaker? Well, that decides it.
As a Pats fan, I hope so. Give it to him. Give the award to him. Like, I don't want – there's so much shit going on with the Patriots with this new Stephon Diggs stuff. Let Matthew Stafford have the MVP. keep the cameras and all the accolades and everything. Yeah. We've got enough going on. I don't like, dude. It took an alien sent from Mars, Patrick Mahomes, to win an MVP in a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? And I was just looking it up. I think this is the perfect, a movable object meets an unstoppable force. Stafford has the numbers, the touchdown, the touchdown interception ratio. Drake May has all the efficiency numbers, all the downfield passing numbers, all of kind of like the advanced stats. So you kind of have. Do you remember what happened in 2003 with the co-MVPs where Peyton Manning and Steve McNair?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, it's almost the exact same thing. Dude, Steve McNair was kind of the all like mobile quarterback, do it all kind of guy. Maybe not the flashy numbers, but the very productive player. And Peyton Manning was this cerebral guy with these crazy passing numbers. So I don't know. Am I hoping that there's a tie or that Drake May wins? No, in my heart of hearts, I as a Patriots fan, don't want Drake May to win the award. I think there's too much that comes with it. I think sometimes it's a curse. I want the team success, blah, 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 boilerplate answers, all that stuff. But also, I would love to see a tie just because I love when people freak out. And I think this day and age, dude, they've changed the overtime rules to get rid of ties, dude. Let's get a tie going in the MVP race.
It's going to be one of these two guys. And the guy I'm going to mention is not going to win it. But there is a very real chance that the number one seed in the NFC will be led by a running back with pretty close to 20 touchdowns and well over 2,000 yards of total offense, and that's Christian McCaffrey. He's already got 2,000 yards, 17 touchdowns. If they win on Sunday against Seattle, they'll be the number one seed in the NFC. And again, it's a quarterback award, but I think that, you know, if we're being – fair about this, Christian McCaffrey really should get some consideration for MVP.
Yeah, well, dude, even when we talked about this award halfway through the season, when Drake May became a demagogue, like we were talking about Jonathan Taylor, who was, if you went by the letter of the effing word, the Colts would not have a effing win this season if they didn't have Jonathan Taylor. I'm being hyperbolic, obviously, but like, if you're going by the letter of the word, the person who is the most valuable player to the team never wins the award. Those years where the Rams were good with Jared Goff, you know who the most valuable player in the NFC probably was? Was Aaron Donald. He never got a sniff for MVP. There's years that JJ Watt should have gotten sniffs for MVP. I don't know. I'll get off my soapbox. I think it's a very – Manish, I appreciate you bringing this up because, like, finally we have a compelling reason. Dude, because last year it was completely narrative-based. Friggin' Lamar Jackson has better stats all the way down the list. Josh Allen had been waiting in the wings, and he finally gets over the hump. So I don't know if they do that again, Burrs. Like you said, a legacy award or just throwing him a bone this year. But the precedent's already been set that's kind of what this comes down to sometimes. If there's one over the other.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, talking about Christian McCaffrey, that'll lead us right into our
big market, dude. Big market segue.
Number three team, it's the San Francisco 49ers. It'd be really impressive if somehow Christian McCaffrey comes out with 100 yards receiving in this game, and he's one of those 1,000 type running backs. Yeah. I think he's done it once in his career before. It's only happened, I think, three times total prior. Marshall Faulk, I believe, was he the MVP of the league? Or was that Kurt Warner that year?
I think Warner. I don't know. They were good for 3 years. I'm not sure if each of them won. I'm not sure.
Warner. I honestly can't remember. No, it was Kurt Warner who won it. But regardless, anytime a running back can get 1,000 rush yards and 1,000 receiving yards just shows you how valuable that player is to their team. And, you know, you look at the 49ers, they're the number three team on our power rankings, coming off a wildly exciting Sunday night game against the Chicago Bears, where it just seemed the offense was just all over the place, came down to the end of the game. The 49ers end up winning 42-38. Earlier on in the season when Brock Purdy was hurt, Mac Jones was playing, I was kind of down on the 49ers, especially given who was in that division over there in the NFC West with the Rams and the Seahawks. But the 49ers just keep winning. They're riding, a six-game win streak right now. They're playing their best football at the right time. You talk about peaking at the right time in late December, already locked up a playoff spot. Big matchup coming up this week against the Seahawks, which I believe it's for the division. I don't think there's anything that that else that needs to go on. I'd have to look back on it. But, I mean, it's a the 49ers win this game, there's a good chance they end up winning that gauntlet of a division in the NFC West. And, you know, for me, the thing that could really hurt the 49ers, obviously, is their defense. Now, while their offense has been going crazy the last couple of weeks, they have been giving up a pretty high amount of points. 38 to the Bears, 27 the week before to the Colts, led by Phillip Rivers, 24 to the Titans the week before that. So if you're going to talk about a part that could be maybe their kryptonite, their defense, but their offense is proving that they can kind of go toe for toe with anybody in the league. And for me, I'm surprised that they're sitting here right now. It kind of just goes to show you the job that Kyle Shanahan has done navigating their injuries over there that they've had this season, being without Brock Purdy for a big period of time. Says quite a bit to what Kyle Shanahan has done over there.
Yeah, if for some crazy reason anybody to do with the 49ers organization is listening to this podcast, get that practice field away from that electrical substation. I can send you a Twitter thread on it. You got to get it away. That's where all your injuries are coming from. I'll take off my tinfoil hat. Christian McCaffrey this year, more receiving yards than Kyle Pitts, DK Metcalf, Drake London, Travis Kelce, Davante Adams, Ladd McConkey, T. Higgins, Michael Pittman Jr., Keenan Allen. There was one more guy on here that he had more and Brock Bowers, but Brock Bowers has only played 12 games. But yeah, Christian McCaffrey has 100. He's going to end up with 100 catches and over 900 yards on the season. It's insane.
Yeah, and he's actually, you mentioned a gauntlet of pretty good players. McCaffrey has more than twice as many receiving yards than any New York Jets receiver. So
the Jets, gotta get the Jets zing in there.
Aren't they the first? They're one of the first teams in the modern era to not have a 400-yard receiver 16 games into the season, or something crazy like that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stats, but yeah, that's one of them. They don't have a 400-yard receiver, which I thought was comical on a number of levels. Burge, I'm really glad you mentioned Kyle Shanahan. He's not going to win Coach of the Year because the preseason expectations were too high for the Niners. But the fact that, as you mentioned, you know, Brock Purdy missed 8 games, essentially half the season. George Kittle missed 6 games. We'll see if he plays in this last game, but he missed a big chunk of the season. By the way, people tend to forget they haven't had Nick Bosa since week 3. Mm-hmm. So a lot of superstar players missing significant time, and they're on the verge of getting the number 1 seed if they can beat Seattle. A great job by them. As you said, a little concerned about the defense, which is a little surprising because Robert Saleh is typically a good defensive coordinator, but there's a scenario if they don't win that they play the Eagles in a 3-6 matchup in the NFC in round 1, which is would be a dynamite game because those two teams hate each other for a number of different reasons. There's a lot of recent playoff history that can, you know, tell that story. But I would love to see a 3-6 matchup of San Francisco against Philadelphia in Philly. I think that would be maybe the best game of Wild Card Weekend.
You're just a sucker for pain sometimes, dude. You want to see an absolute slugfest with your Philadelphia. Whatever team Philly gets in the first round, it's going to be an absolute slugfest.
Hopefully they can complete a pass in the second half, regardless of who they play. They're not going to get bailed out by a wide-open receiver having an errant throw at him on a two-point conversion if that happens. So, but that's a different discussion for a different podcast.
Well, I'm glad we're done with the Jets talk because Manish, get to number 2 on the power rankings here.
Yeah, we're good with the Jaguars. You know, that's like that's a flavor of the month. You know, I don't think we talked about the Jaguars prior to December, probably because none of us really believed in them. But, you know, they've won 7 in a row. They're probably going to finish the season beating the Titans. So they'll be on an 8-game winning streak entering the postseason. It's actually fascinating. Varying degrees of odds, but I believe entering week 18, there is a chance that the Jags can be the 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, or 7 seed. I believe that's correct. It could be a number of different slots for them. I mean, some are much more likely than others, but that just kind of speaks to how wide open the AFC has been. And I'm anxious to see what Trevor Lawrence does. He didn't particularly play well in their win against the Colts last week. Kind of reverted back to the Trevor Lawrence that we had seen much of in the early part of his career and not really much of in the last month. But prior to this game, he had been on a heater, and something that you, Joe, have said repeatedly throughout the course of the year is just how dynamic he is with his legs. We kind of forget about that at times, but You know, Liam Combe has been playing at an exceptionally high level. They could get their 13th win, and all likely will get their 13th win, which would be the second most wins in franchise history, second only to the 1999 team that went 14-2 with Tom Coughlin as quarterback, Mark Brunell throwing to Jimmy Smith and that crew. So it's been a very long time for this franchise, and you know, for them to turn it around to this degree with a first-year head coach really speaks to how good of a job Cohen has done. And, you know, since we talked about the MVP, just briefly, I don't think you can go wrong with any number of first-year head coaches to be the coach of the year. I think that Mike Vrabel is going to win it, but Cohen, you know, has a legit claim. You know, Johnson in is it Johnson with the Bears?
Ben Johnson.
Johnson with the Bears. I don't know why I had a brain cramp. I think all three of those guys, frankly, if it could split that three ways, I think all three of them are worthy to be coach of the year. But you know what's happened in Jacksonville is remarkable, because you know, for all the credit that we give Vrabel for turning around, you know, what's happened with New England, you know, they didn't have a good culture over the last several years, but you know, over the last couple decades, they've been, you know, champions. Whereas Jacksonville has really had a poor culture for such a long time. And, you know, it's good to see that fan base. I say that on a personal level because I have family in Jacksonville, but it is really good to see one of these terrible franchises for a very long time seemingly get it right with their head coaching hire.
Yeah, and it's funny, to dovetail off the head coach thing, I was watching NFL Network the other day, and unfortunately, they did a whole segment on the Jaguars. I'm just kidding. They did a segment on the Jaguars, and they related Liam Cohen's coaching style to that of Dabo Sweeney. And they said that it's not like Trevor Lawrence isn't a non-accountable guy, isn't held accountable or anything like that, but they're saying that his personality is like unlocked by like a hard ass coach. And I remember, and when they were talking about it, I remember, do you remember like week two or three where Trevor Lawrence like totally missed somebody and Cohen was on the sidelines like, dude, hit him in the, I'm going to use words here, mom, turn down the radio, hit him in the fucking chest. You can see him, right. Hit him between the numbers, hit him in the fucking chest. And like, you can kind of see a little of these tough coaching and a tough love moments from Cohen on Lawrence. And now the dude is like, I just looked up the MVP odds. Dude, he's top five. I know he's not going to win it, but he's top five MVP odds now, the way he's been playing the last couple weeks. So, I don't know. I think a lot of players need to be coached in different ways, and the millennial player is going to be tougher and tougher to coach as we get through, as we get farther into the NFL history here. And I think the Jaguars have nailed it with their coach-quarterback combo there. Let's finish up the rankings here. We've got the Seahawks at number one. Dude, this isn't a flashy team. This is a get-it-done team. Sam Darnold's going to throw you one right in the numbers if you're the defense, but he's also going to have a couple drives where he executes perfectly, and they go down the field just feeding Jaxon Smith-Njigba. They've got I've said it a million times, well-rounded team. They can defend the pass. They can defend the rush. They can throw the ball. They can run the ball. They've got an excellent head coach a young head coach, somebody who was in the coach of the year running recently, right? Was it last year? I can't remember. But, yeah, the Seahawks got it all going right now. They're deserving of the number one spot. They might be the number one team coming out of that gauntlet of the NFC West, as Birch talked about. But, yeah, man, I don't think this isn't – they don't have an MVP candidate after Darnold had that four-interception game. He was out of that. They don't have a – Jaxon Smith-Njigba was far and away on pace for 2,100 yards. He's cooled off a little bit. Both of their running backs have exactly the same amount of yards. Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker have legitimately the same amount of rushing yards. So congratulations on your dumbass fantasy research this year. It didn't fucking matter. But so like this team isn't overly, they don't have a DPOY candidate. They don't have there's no overwhelming kind of faction on this team that makes it go. They're just a really good, well-rounded team. I don't know if you guys have any takes outside of that on the Seahawks.
We're gonna learn this week. Like, what version of Sam Darnold's gonna show up with when it's nut cutting time? We gonna see last year? Or are we gonna see this year?
I don't know. Yeah. Who has the Niners? Manish, you have the Niners. I would
in our picks.
I would sell my fucking house not and take all the money and put it on the Niners this week. I think Sam Darnold might have a Nate Peterman 4 interception in a quarter kind of game, dude.
run that by your wife before you mortgage your house.
Oh no, this is classic. What's the classic quote? I wanted a bike, so somebody told me to ask God, so I know he doesn't work that way. So I stole a bike and asked for forgiveness. So that might be a little bit what I do. Ask for forgiveness instead of permission. Bears, break out the spreadsheet. Let's do some picks.
All right. Well, I got one question to start this off, Joe. Did your dog make your picks this week?
No, but he will be making my picks for all of September 2026. So stay tuned to find out.
Yes, the lock of the week bet failed 2 weeks in a row.
yep. So I'm giving up the rights to my picks all first 4 weeks next week. We'll have to do some voting on how we do the picks, treats or whatever.
All right. Well, we sit going into week 18 here. Joe and Manish, identical records, 22-28-1. I sit at 28-23, which is why everybody is picking against me in all of my games, trying to get back here. So I'll start us off here because we're trying to pick meaningful games. We didn't want to subject you to any of the garbage that's going on in week 18. I was kind of forced into picking Detroit +3. I don't feel great about it. Chicago's got obviously has more to play for. They want to lock up that second seed. They don't have a shot at the one seed. So maybe we'll see Chicago kind of, put their foot off the gas in this one. And Detroit obviously wanting to kind of play spoiler. Maybe we'll see them there. They are +3. I will take Detroit +3. The next game has some playoff implications, but it doesn't really involve the teams that are playing in this game. I'm going to take Atlanta, and they are -3.5 playing New Orleans. If Atlanta wins this game, it has impacts on the Carolina Bucs result. I don't have it in front of me exactly how it impacts the game. I'm sure we will get into that with the other guys here. But I'm going to take Atlanta -3.5. They go in, they beat the Rams. Great team to play spoiler. They got nothing to play for, and still they showed up the other night and made the MVP front runner come back down to earth. So we'll see what they can do in this next game. And for my lock of the week, because we are picking the playoff games, I'm the one that's been saying I'm higher on this team. I think they're going to make the playoffs. They got a shot. I'm taking the Carolina Panthers +2.5.
Say it, Burris. Keep pounding.
Keep pounding.
And I wanted to say it when Manish was like, yeah, the Pats got to beat three teams with a winning record to like win the Super Bowl. Wrong, because if we # keep pounding, they'll only have to beat two, and then they'll play the Panthers in the Super Bowl. So, anyway, okay. Sorry. Go, Burris. I'm just kidding.
I'm not sure I understand that.
Games to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but then those don't count for your regular season record. They'll still be friggin' whatever. Not 8-9, right? Yeah, it'll be 8-9 forever.
All right.
Anyways, I have the Carolina Panthers getting points on the road in Tampa. Tampa has just been a team that has really fallen off this season. I don't know if. They're coming into this game on a 4-game losing streak. They lost to the lowly Dolphins last week. I don't know. This might be Todd Bowles' last game coaching for the Buccaneers. I don't know. The way that this team is, they started off the season hot. We were talking about them as this elite team. This, Baker Mayfield's going to be an MVP candidate. And then the wheels just absolutely came off the bus. I don't have any faith that they're going to win this game. I think that Carolina is going to use some of what the blueprint of what they used when they played them a few weeks ago, when they beat them, running the ball, keep pounding, as we talked about with Jonathan Stewart, when we had him on a couple of weeks ago. I like the Panthers to get into the playoffs here. Bounce back moment for Bryce Young. So those are my three picks. Manish, go. Who you got?
All right, we'll just pick up where you left off. I'm taking the Bucs. -2.5 at
Stalker.
Home. Yeah, well, look, I was going to take this regardless. I mean, it helps out that if I'm right, you're automatically wrong, and I got nothing to lose. So, there's no more dangerous picker than a guy who's got nothing to lose. We're not really playing for money. I can make wild picks. But I genuinely believe the Bucs will win. They lost a couple weeks back to Carolina, losing to the same division opponent within a few weeks. typically doesn't happen. And I think this is a Baker Mayfield game. I can't give you statistics because, you know, as you mentioned, I believe, look, they've lost four in a row. They've lost, I think, seven of their last eight. I mean, the wheels are completely falling off. I believe that Tristan Wirfs, who's dealing with a toe injury and did not play last week, will be back, which will be a massive help for Baker Mayfield. But, you know, as you said earlier in this podcast, and as we've talked about at various points in big moments, this is nut cutting time. And there is nobody I would rather have in this game on my side in nut cutting time than Baker Mayfield. He will scratch and claw and run and flip over guys and make critical third down scrambles. He will do whatever he needs to do. And by the way, he's got an old man who can still play a little bit in Mike Evans. I think those guys are going to connect for some big plays in this game. And I'm just not a believer in the Carolina Panthers. I applaud the effort. I applaud the improvement for Dave Canales and his team. You know, nice progress from a year ago for Bryce Young. But I think that, you know, when it's all said and done, what do we always say? NFC South underperforms, but who always comes out of that division? Who typically comes out of that division? It's Todd Bowles and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I think they will win this game. Will they win the division? I'm not so sure, because as you alluded to, Burge, a moment ago, the Bucs are no longer in a win and in scenario. They were entering Monday night, but the Rams did them no favors by losing to Atlanta. And because the Falcons won, now we see a potential scenario where if the Falcons beat the Saints on Sunday, remember the Bucs-Tampa game is on Saturday, if Atlanta beats the Saints on Sunday, there's a three-way tie atop that division at 8-9, believe it or not. And the tiebreaker ultimately comes down to division record, common opponents, whatever it is. The bottom line is that the Carolina Panthers, in that scenario, in a three-way tie, would come away with the NFC South crown, even if they do lose to Tampa. So Carolina wins, they're in. Tampa wins, they've got to wait 24 hours and see if the New Orleans Saints, who stink, can help them out by beating the Falcons. So I'm not overly optimistic there, but you can only control what you can in Week 18. I think the Bucs will be highly motivated. And again, for as poorly as the team has played for the better part of 2 months, and for as disappointing, frankly, as Baker Mayfield has been during that time, I think in a must-win game, last game of the regular season, he's going to deliver. They're going to win, and then they're going to have to sit and wait and, you know, unfortunately for them, hope that a very bad Saints team gets them into the playoffs. You know, time will tell on that. So that's my first game.
It's got to be the common opponents that's going to get them in. I'm just looking at the standings.
Yeah, it's common. I think the Panthers maybe 3-1 in common opponents, something like that. But somehow, look, the Bucs really only have themselves to blame, because if they had taken care of business and beaten the Dolphins last week, they would also be in a win and in scenario. But that did not happen. Now they got to win and get some help. So there we are. Yeah, my second game is another monster game on the slate. It's the last game of the regular season, Sunday Night Football, Steelers-Ravens. You know, Steelers did themselves no favors as well by losing to the Cleveland Browns last week. Very disappointing. And it would be very unfortunate for Steeler Nation and for Aaron Rodgers, frankly, if they missed the playoffs because of Ryan Kennedy. And Ryan Kennedy, of course, is the fan who baited DK Metcalf into the physical altercation that resulted in DK Metcalf's two-game suspension that will keep him out of this season finale. They obviously could have used him last week, as evidenced by the three incomplete passes in the end zone to MVS. You got to believe those balls would have gone to DK Metcalf. You probably got to believe that he would have come down with one of those three for a touchdown, but it didn't happen. And Aaron Rodgers is really throwing to a depleted receiving core that not only includes MVS, but as Adam Thielen, who frankly I forgot was on the team, and not many dynamic weapons. Really, Kenneth Gainwell is probably their best option in the pass game, believe it or not. So it's going to be tough sledding. What I can assure you is that Derrick Henry will not do to the Steelers what he did the other night to the Packers, you know, running for over 200 yards and four touchdowns. The Steelers are not going to allow that. So if the Ravens are going to win. It's going to be because Tyler Huntley or Lamar Jackson, we're not sure who the quarterback is at the time of this recording. It's going to be because one of those two guys is going to have to beat them through the air. You know, the other wrinkle in this game, we're unsure if TJ Watt is going to play. I tend to think that he won't. I believe that Mike Tomlin said he wants to see Watt practice all week before giving him the green light. I just think it's a little bit too risky. So I don't know if you're going to see Watt. And if he does play, how effective will he actually be? All that being said, as I said a moment ago, I'm placing my faith in Baker Mayfield in that first game. I'm placing my faith, and maybe it's just blind faith, in Aaron Rodgers. I desperately want to see Aaron Rodgers make the postseason after those two miserable, forgettable seasons with the Jets. I would like to see him make the postseason. I fear, as a football fan, that if he does not make the postseason this year, you know, that may be it. He may retire. And, you know, he's a polarizing figure. I understand it. I get it. But from a pure football perspective, I would love to see Rodgers in the playoffs, you know, one more time. So I'm going to take the Steelers. They're what they're given. What is it? 3.5? Oh, no, they're getting 3.5. They're getting 3.5. You know, I think it'll be a fourth quarter game. And, you know, I think when it's all said and done, the old man's got a little bit left in him. I think he's going to make a play or two to push the Steelers into the postseason. And my lock of the week, one of the other meaningful games, it's the second Saturday game on the slate, 49ers hosting Seattle. It's a rematch from week one, which really doesn't mean anything. The 49ers won up in Seattle week one. Again, two teams are completely different. I don't take much stock in that. You know, as we said earlier, I am a little concerned about the Niners defense. Caleb Williams and the Bears kind of did what they wanted to do for most of that game in a shootout. But, you know, I'm a big believer in Christian McCaffrey. I'm a massive believer in Kyle Shanahan. It's a big game. As we said earlier, so many injuries to difference-making players, yet they have persevered and put themselves on the precipice of being the number one seed. You know, they're getting 1 point against Seattle. Don't quite understand that. It's a home game. I would be thinking that if anything, they'd be giving a point to Seattle. But you know, as Joe said, you know, earlier, you know, it's a big game for Sam Darnold. You know, seeing is believing. You're never going to find a bigger believer in Sam Darnold than I have been for, you know, the better part of 10 years. But I'm a bigger believer in the San Francisco 49ers. And I think it'll be a fun game. I think it'll be a fourth quarter game. It might be the best, you know, game when we look back on the week slate, the weekend slate. But you know, when it's all said and done, I think the Niners are going to be the team that's not going to be playing in Wild Card Weekend. They're going to get the win. Brock Purdy playing out of his mind the last few weeks, and I think it's going to be enough. I think it'll be, you know, very similar to what we saw the other night against the Bears. You know, defense might be optional, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to bet against Kyle Shanahan. I'm certainly not betting against Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. That's going to be – I can't wait to watch. I'm glad that's a standalone game on Saturday. That's going to be a fun one to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just – dude, you guys have already talked about all my picks. I'll just run through them here to get to – and then I'll end with my lock. I've got the Saints plus 3.5 versus Atlanta. The Saints are absolutely terrible. They've been playing a little bit better over the last month. Tyler Shuck has been has been playing well and is now the leader in the clubhouse for the Offensive Rookie of the Year award, which is crazy. Would you think how Emeka Ekugba, am I saying that right?
Egbuka.
I always fuck that one up.
Gronk. Like Gronk.
Yeah, dude. What was he? Rabble
Egbuka
Me Holmes. No, Rabble Me Holmes is still the best one ever, dude. When he's trying to say Rattle Mahomes, he said Rabble Me Holmes. Still, it's so good. But, yeah, give me the Saints plus 3.5. They've been playing a little bit better. And then I think looking to play spoiler in a game that doesn't matter is the only, like, you know what I mean? If there's any motivation in this game to fucking do something, it's Kirk Cousins proving that he's maybe worth a backup spot, and those Saints playing spoiler. I'm going to stay consistent to my word the entire year and take the Bears minus 3 versus Detroit. I think the Bears are looking to finish the season strong and head into the playoffs. Nobody wants to back in or limp into the playoffs. I think Ben Johnson's gotten done a good job getting that team on the same page, pulling in the same direction. I don't think anything changes this weekend. And for the my lock of the week, my hater pick of the week. I hate Aaron Rodgers, and the fucking Ravens are going to not only beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, they're going to cover 3.5. All right.
On Sunday and his night, career.
Somebody is going to, they're going to drive a heart through the, drive a stake through the, drive a, what is it? Silver, shoot a silver bullet through the werewolf's heart on Sunday night to end the season. That's how the season's going to end. But yeah, dude, I'm so happy. The only thing the NFL gets right with the schedule is just putting everybody at 1 o'clock, like scheduling everybody at 1 o'clock on this Sunday and then moving the games around as they matter, playing the ones that the playing the same games at the same times. So make sure they have more teams playing and playing their starters. I don't know. I think they've done a good job with the schedule changes, putting all these divisional games at the end of the year and having the flexibility to put them in the right time windows. But that's all I got, boys. Anything else from you guys?
Let's get right. Let's get through week 18, and then next week we'll be talking playoff ball, baby.
We're gonna have to rework the friggin' power ranking segments. Maybe we'll just like
we're gonna have to create a bracket. I'll do a bracket. Challenge.
Maybe we'll do like bracketology or something. That's a good idea, Birch. Great idea.
That's why I'm here. Right. I ain't here for my looks or my voice.
All right. Well, if you didn't catch our interview with Aditi Kinkabwala, sideline reporter for CBS on Sundays. Check that out. We released it on Wednesday, the day before this one came out. But that was the Week 18 preview. We've got an implication-filled Saturday and Sunday, implication-filled New Year's weekend, and then we get into what we've all been waiting for, which is the NFL playoffs. We will catch you next week. Goodbye.